Today we're talking about factions, guilds, and other big picture affiliations.
Welcome to Passive Aggressive Perception, the system agnostic TTRPG podcast, where we ask more questions than we provide answers.
I am Ivan, and this is the judge to my dread. I am the law. Steve.
Is this the original one or the reboot?
The reboot was great. I don't know. The original one is also great, though. It's Stallone versus, what's his name? Is it Clive Owen?
I'm not going to bail you out.
God damn it. I can't remember his name. It was definitely Carl Urban. He was great, though. The commitment to never taking off your helmet for an entire movie is pretty next level.
Probably not going to thrill too many actors who are like, okay, cool. I get to be a voice.
Yeah.
That was like with The Mandalorian when he's like, I don't give a shit. No, like, I'm taking my helmet off because I'm just not a voice actor only.
Now that you mention it, it's more common than you think. People just being like, you know what? If you could just leave the costume on 24/7, wait, breathing holes? You need those? No, we're good. We do have a little bit of TTRPG news for today that I figure we should cover. There are some very exciting things happening in the world of RPGs lately. I'm gonna gloss over this first one because if you haven't heard of this, then you've probably been on communications blackout for the past month, in which case you're not listening to this podcast. But I'm gonna say two words, 1D&D. And that's really it. If you need to know more about 1D&D, go look it up. The very, very long and short of it is it's basically a new edition. It's an overhaul and update of the source books for 5e, as well as a whole bunch of digital tools with, I guess, diversity, representation, and accessibility all top of mind in this overhaul. That's as far as I'm going to go in depth because the world is exploding with this right now. So you probably don't need to hear it from us.
Also, it's not out yet and it's not going to be out for a while. And who knows what it's going to look like when it's done because they did this for 3.5.
Yes,
and
they did
this for 4.
Yes,
and
they did
this for 5. And none of it looked like the original announcement.
Right.
And none of it's going to make anybody happy.
Yep. Yep, yep. People always have something to complain about, luckily, for better or for worse.
Well, luckily, it's not for us to make people happy about D&D. Thank God.
Yeah. Sometimes the criticism is for the better. I'm kind of interested to see what people have to say about it. But that's about all I want to talk about it today. So we're going to move on to the next news item to some really, I would think, more interesting stuff. This is one you sent to me recently. This is a product that's coming out from Wormworks, and it's for 5e, but it's called Attention Deficit for 5e. It's a supplement introducing characters with disabilities, mental illnesses, and neurodivergences into 5e. It's coming with a whole bunch of stuff. It's got 450 new traits, 78 random tables, 200 plus magic items, 4 monsters, 6 spells, service animals, a one-shot, and just like tons and tons and tons more. And I guess everybody involved has disabilities, neurodivergence, or mental or chronic illness.
Yeah. This is for when wizards can't get their shit together or get like someone who knows what they're talking about and they just like try to make some supplement that they rush through.
Sure.
To just be like, yeah, combat wheelchair. We'll take that idea.
Right. And I mean, listen, Wizards is owned by Hasbro. Hasbro is huge. Never forget that as much as people love D&D, myself included, it is run by a freaking megacorp, right? Don't expect them to always do 100% the right thing because we're always going to see things like half measures.
Don't expect them to do anything that's not bottom line. That's what Hasbro's proven time and time again. Let the boutique publishers do the cool stuff.
Right. Moving on, the next news item that we have today is that Embracer Group has just acquired the intellectual property rights to The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
That's the parent company of Asmodee.
Yeah, they acquired Asmodee. And is it Asmodee or Asmodee? I never know. I've only ever read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, perfect. Good answer. It's the parent company of Asmodee and Dark Horse, which is obviously the comics.
Yeah, it's venture capital.
Yeah.
Venture capital.
Yeah. Yeah.
The giant hedge fund venture capital thing that's, you know, buys up this and then breaks off all the pieces and makes a mess of things. And hopefully they don't make a mess of this because Asmodee has like so many cool properties.
Yeah, exactly. And Asmodee had been acquiring rights to Hobbit games. And this includes, when we say intellectual property rights, for those that don't kind of know how this kind of stuff works, you get licensing usually and you pay whoever owns the intellectual property a whole bunch of money, and then you can make things like board games and RPGs and video games, what have you. Mm-hmm. Asmodee's been doing this super successfully. They've released in just the past few years like 12 different games from Tolkien, like 100 different expansions and supplements. Like, it's a huge, huge thing. And they said that this sale could have gone for $2 billion. A $2 billion with a B dollar property.
Yeah, the Tolkien estate and all their, who owns all Zalzance and all that stuff that own all these things are just a pile of money.
I know. Their skin has started sloughing off to be replaced with money.
Well, look forward to Disney buying Asmodee.
It's really weird. It's weird timing considering the Rings of Power are coming out right now. Free League just released the One Ring, the new version. It seems like there's a lot of tumult going on with Tolkien right now. And Tolkien estate hates Peter Jackson's interpretation. So they want nothing to do with Peter Jackson anymore. So, like, Peter Jackson is such a widely loved vestige of that in, like, the pop culture mindset right now that it's just strained. It's a strange time for it to be shifting hands, I guess. And last but not least, we have one more piece of news that you sent me. I'm actually surprised that you sent this to me instead of vice versa.
This wasn't necessarily meant as a news item. I just knew that it was going to make your wallet explode.
It makes me very happy. So for the 35th anniversary, all Dritz books ever in publication are now going to be reprinted both physically and digitally with all new covers, which I think is cool. Is it necessary? No. But is it cool? Sure. Why the hell not? Sounds neat.
Well, especially with, like, all the news of Ari Salvatore trying to, like, kind of right the ship on a lot of, like...
Yeah, totally.
Questionable or stuff that didn't age well.
And, exactly.
You know, things that maybe you need to put eyes back on.
Yeah, and I mean, Ari Salvatore was somebody really to look at, too, in this kind of, like, continued movement. Because he's just, like, another dude that was like, listen, man, I wrote some problematic crap back in the day, and I would really love to fix it. So, like, again, nobody's perfect, but props for at least acknowledging that and taking a stance.
Good on you.
Yeah. So now to sink into the meat and potatoes, my friends. Today we're talking about factions, guilds, and other kinds of large-scale affiliations in your TTRPG games. I think that this is a pretty interesting topic. What is it that draws you to this topic, Steve?
Well, the main thing that makes factions interesting is that it does two things. One, it pushes action because the things that you do have impact on the world, not just on yourself. And one of the ways to illustrate that is like what impacts it has on other groups, whether they're just some other criminal gang like yours, all the way to the biggest halls of power. When you do something, if you have success, someone else is probably impacted by that negatively, and then they don't want a piece of you. Or if you mess something up, you draw attention to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shows how there are ripple effects in what you do. There are consequences to your actions, for better or for worse. And also, I like that it kind of like it's a story mover. These can be the quest givers, but also they can just be like the fallout of things. Okay, so you did a mission.
Right,
what next? Sometimes it's damage control. Sometimes it's the assassination attempt on you because you hit someone else in their pocketbook. You know, when it comes to, like, I think of like Shadowrun, you know, when you do a job that hits a corporation, the corporation is pissed and they want to know who did that. And now they're coming for you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you got paid by a faction that is on kind of your side, or at least is, you know, offers you an opportunity to make good. But the domino effects in the world can be far reaching. It can be very small, but there can be large impacts to things. And that's how the story gets driven. It's not just you do a job and then you go, okay, like, what's next? Sometimes the what's next is the immediate fallout of what you just did.
I really like that take on things. It's kind of like a tangible manifestation of your actions have consequences. I even like kind of the looser, more ethereal interpretation of that. So, like, say the Enterprise, like, you are technically Starfleet. That's a faction. We're going to ignore that. But let's even just talk about the community of the USS Enterprise in Star Trek. If you don't show up for bridge duty, you're kind of like fucking up everybody else's thing. You know what I mean? Like, that has direct and immediate impact on everybody else on that ship. And I guess giving characters common ground with a larger entity is what's so compelling about this for me. It's about sharing the common ground and seeing how what you do affects them as well as the party you're immediately with.
Yeah, and there's a lot of scope to this. I mean, yeah, there are big entities, but there are factions your size or smaller. I mean, there's another adventuring group is a faction.
You know,
if they're an ally of yours or if they're the ones that you're trying to beat to the next job, you know, it's enemies, it's allies, it's even unaligned groups that exist in your campaign world that when you pull on something, it pulls somewhere else.
Yeah, you know? I think this is one of our more food for thought episodes, which I actually really like because I like getting back into this format where we're just kind of having like an open discourse about things that we think are interesting. And I would love if people were interested enough in the stuff that we're talking about that this could maybe help inform their games and how they run factions. And I think that that's kind of the secondary point to why we're doing this. I think everything we just said leads into why factions could be a great inclusion into your game, and that it's that factions can help give an adventuring party's actions greater purpose, right? So fighting for something larger than themselves can be a great narrative push, and it can help build something beyond the realm of, well, we're going to go adventure in this dungeon, we're going to go kill these goblins, but like, why again? Why?
Right. If a player brings a background to you that says, you know, I want to fight for freedom, or I want to align myself with this magic college or whatever, like there's a faction out there that's trying to do the thing that you're trying to do. So you can ally characters with existing yeah. factions. You don't have to build everything from the ground up. You want to join a magic college? All right, cool. You can event one if you want, but there probably is one.
Right.
So join right. it. You know? Yeah. So I think of like, okay, so we have like good beneficial factions, obviously, like kind of the OG one is kind of like you think of like patrons.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
because usually they are the head of or like a bigwig in a literal faction. Sometimes
yeah.
they're flying solo, but generally they're going to be the leaders of something,
yeah.
you know, and your allies, you know, if you are in the Rebel Alliance, like there are other cells that are allied factions that make up this alliance, you know. All the way to the other end of the spectrum, which is your literal enemies. If you're the Thieves Guild, then the Coppers are an enemy faction, or there is, you know, like some other element of organized crime in the right, city you right. operate in that's not into thievery, but it's things, you know, you pull thieving jobs that impact them negatively. Now right. you have a enemy faction to deal with.
Well, I mean, what's scarier too than one person going after you only to learn that it's like an organization coming after you? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like one person pissed off might come at you with a weapon and try to hurt you. But when you've got a corporation behind it saying, by the way, no matter where you go or what you do, we have eyes on you.
Right. And well, and that's the scale. Okay. So like, yeah, you can like take out the assassin who came for you, like woohoo, you win that combat encounter. But like, that might just be like one disposable asset for like a bigger issue. Now you, it's a way to show the characters the scope of what they got themselves
yeah,
into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You stole the thing.
Yeah.
But right. like it belonged to someone. Now that's an enemy faction.
right.
You know, you stole something, but you didn't ask permission from the city's Thieves Guild. You just came into the city, pulled a job that they should get a cut from.
Right.
Now, instead of the Thieves Guild being allies for you, the thief, now
they're real pissed off
because you didn't get the proper Thieves Guild permits.
Exactly.
For thieves. Chicanery.
Yeah. I mean, I actually really like that you said patron, and I want to touch on that just in 1 second, but I do want to get out ahead of this and say that we are very much aware that there are a lot of games that include factions very heavily, both mechanically and narratively. A couple of examples that come to my mind are Dune from Modiphius. Like, having a faction is one of the most important facets of that game. Another one is Shattered City, which you can hear all about on one of our Dusty Stack episodes. You can also check it out on the website where we have affiliate links, etc. But yeah, like the games like that exist. The one that you brought up, Dragon Heist, right?
Right.
D&D Dragon Heist. The factions are a huge part of that game. So we're aware that these kind of like paradigms exist. We're also, I guess, talking more about how to include factions if they don't otherwise already exist in your game and the benefits of doing so. The thing I just wanted to say quickly about patrons is that's another huge advantage to including factions, because sometimes even if it's not an individual patron, the faction itself could be a patron. And that can really help you run a certain style of game. So if your group isn't particularly into bookkeeping and they want to hand wave away some of the minutia and like the smaller like money tracking and stuff like that, you can always have this as a fallback just to say like, hey, you know what? We're not going to worry about how much you have to pay to get on the boat and then get across the ocean and then move on to another country and rent horses or camels or what have you. Like, you're just going to be able to do that because your faction is backing it. We're not going to make you guys sit and track every gold piece.
Right. Yeah, sometimes it's an issue of accessibility. You may get yeah. in, you may become involved in a faction because you need something that you don't have access to because you're relatively small time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, the guild that runs that, or, you know, the criminal enterprise that has, you know, has just acquired a bunch of that thing you need. Or even if you're just allied with the government of the area, you know, they may send you off to some other country to do espionage. So you're going to have the full backing of the government. So I don't think that you're too worried about counting your fuel for your car
right.
to get yeah. to other country to do the espionage. You know,
do the espionage.
Go do some espionage. It's 80 miles. I need vouchers.
I'm gonna need your mileage tracking to know we reimburse. We only reimburse up to 54 cents per mile.
Yes.
But just so you know.
Well, that's the problem with when your faction is general accounting.
Could you imagine? Pay comes in after services rendered. You end up going broke before you get to the target. So halfway there in your car, you run out of gas. You're like, ah, shit, I guess I can't assassinate the political leader because don't have enough gas money.
We gave you that car, but like you have 100 mile a day limit. Like, what are you doing?
Do you think spies and assassins have expense accounts?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the paper trail that they need. What they try to establish, a paper trail so that they, they can retrace their steps.
They've all got Amex cards.
They're like, why are you keeping receipts? That makes you, you're like terrible at this.
We should have gone with the other guy. I knew it.
Literal paper trail guy here is very new at the espionage.
They never told me I was going to have to be good at math to get into killing people. Dang.
So one that I mentioned was Forged in the Dark. Forged in the Dark has mechanics for factions in that they kind of have like the list of factions out there that you can align with, you might be the enemies of, and they all have kind of tiers, right?
Right.
So you start pretty low and your job is to like move up the ranks by improving like your clout, but equal and opposite reaction. So if you want to move up, someone else got to fall. So
true.
You can target them to kind of tear down someone's clout, or just the things you do might have some minimal fallout.
Right.
It's not a direct action, but you know, when you expand your territory, someone else's has got to shrink. You may not be actively like, we're going to take out this gang and take over their territory. But if you just expand a little bit, I mean, gang territory cannot be created nor destroyed.
Correct.
One of the laws of physics.
The laws of thermodynamics.
We all know that. So, you know.
The OG Sir Isaac Newton.
So, Sir Isaac Newton, one of the best game designers in the... back in the 1700. So for like our Simbarum game, there's like these just very big factions, kind of that overarching ones that are like almost kind of too big.
Right.
You know, yeah. You have the queen and her government. You have the Ordo Magica, which is like the magic colleges. You have the Church of Prios. You have the barbarians. And within them, you have like a dozen or so clans. So these things are like things in the distance.
Yeah.
They have this maybe... can be like this oppressive, or if you're aligned with them, you know, it can have these big goals, and they're obviously going to be quest givers too. So when you're small time, you're not necessarily going to tear down the church. But if you do something that the church is not keen on, or even like you have a job to steal some relic that they have, that is a domino effect. Now you can align yourself with the church. You can actively kind of do stuff that they're not going to be super thrilled about. You can try to thread the needle, but you know, again, even if you are not actively trying to harm them, some of the things you do will have fallout that impacts them.
Totally.
And also just like, if you're not working for a faction and you're great, they'll be like, hey,
they're gonna try and scout you, dude.
They're gonna work. Yeah, like,
yeah.
Come be great for us. If you're,
yeah,
you know, yeah. if there's something that where your goals align.
I like that, the kind of idea of large scale factions like that, because this brings me to my next point, which it can really help inform character backstories and general character disposition. So like, we've all been in that place where we have a really great character idea, but maybe we've like min-maxed it a little bit too much and we haven't paid so much attention to the narrative. And we're thinking like, what does my character care about? Why are they a demolitions expert hellbent on blowing everything up? Factions can kind of fill in some of those gaps for you. You can say, oh, like, I happen to be this particular type of mystic, and I align myself with the barbarian clans, which will not only inform the actual abilities that I get to do, but now I have something that I'm working toward. I have something that can help fill in those gaps, and it'll inform your disposition toward people like the Ordo Magica, toward people like the Ambrian Queen and the government. I mean, that works the same way for NPCs as well. So
are you still the demolitions person in this example?
That metaphor went a little sideways. I changed it to mystic, but I mean, I guess what evocation magics will say, you can blow some shit up. Why not?
Right. Well, the question is, what are you blowing up? You just, you know, kind of just hellbent to make explosions? Is that psychological? Are you working for what some might call a terrorist faction? Are you an eco-terrorist? You're blowing up, oil rigs. Are you blowing up enemy military assets? You know, what and why is probably going to push you towards a faction that says, hey, we do that.
Right.
We blow up bridges so the baddies can't invade our lands.
Yeah.
You should help us blow up those bridges, demolitions person.
Totally. And I wish more GMs would latch onto this as well, because I think factions are a really great way to incorporate character backstory into campaigns in a way that isn't necessarily covered in the source material. So it's like, oh, hey, you know that you're kind of like an eco-terrorist. That's what you want to do. You want to blow up logging companies because they're cutting down trees, right? The GM can latch onto that immediately and be like, okay, well, let's just say that you're like a very small part of a cell in the area to a much larger organization. And whenever that GM feels like they can incorporate that into the story or make it relevant, they always have that to pull on. It's a super useful tool.
Okay, so you align yourself with the faction of eco-terrorists in the area who want to do similar things. There's a faction that you are actively against, the loggers.
Right, right.
You have other people who are interested in qualified, successful demolitions people that are going to try to lure you to work for them. Obviously, it's against the law. So a faction that's going to be working against you is the law.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You know, another logging company will be like, hey, we're next. You know, we got to put a stop to this, that kind of thing. Like the people and the groups that are impacted by what you're doing, for better or for worse, are the factions.
Exactly.
So as a GM, identify who stands to gain and who stands to lose by these kind of specific actions of the group, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, at the end of the day, for me, it's also it's something to aspire to. I mean, this can provide context for your characters and give them an end goal to get to. And I mean, that could be a million things. It could be they want to climb the ranks of the faction. Maybe they want to take over the entire faction. Maybe the goal of the campaign is to beat that faction's greatest rival. Or maybe these characters just want to like retire to a grand keep that's in protected lands, protected by that faction. I mean, it can give you kind of like long term goals beyond beat the baddie. It's like, what do you want to happen to this character when they're in their 60s and done adventuring?
Right. It kind of connects the dots. Right. So instead of just being like monster of the week, now the things that you do have intention. Right. So I want to move up the ranks of this eco-terrorist group. I want to grow it. I want to add cells. I want to make us drive everyone out of the Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So in order to do that with our success, we build on things. So we target this specific logging company until they are gone. We're going to drive this faction down to level zero until they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And to do that, we have to have successful missions. We have to recruit more people. We have to deal with the coppers or whoever also is like, hey, we don't love what you're up to. You know, there's a lot of reasons why once you're allied or against certain factions, the adventures and the challenges become much more obvious.
Totally. And I really like that you said successful missions too, because that raises another point that we had an episode. It was last episode, actually, episode 56, if you want to check it out, on Deus Ex Machina and GM Fiat. This applies to that conversation that we'd already had, in that if you misjudge an encounter, or if your players get into an encounter that goes completely off the rails in a really not fun way, operative term being not fun, you can use a faction kind of as a get out of jail free card or a Deus Ex Machina.
Well, you can use it as a get out of jail card, but it's not going to be free.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point to make.
That's why the faction is useful.
Right.
Because
right.
They could literally, okay, so say a job goes sideways and you wind up in literal jail.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of jail card.
There you go.
But it's not free. Now this faction, which maybe you weren't even allied with before, is like, hey, pretty cool to be out of jail, right?
Yeah. You know what you should do for us?
Nice freedom you got there. Be ashamed if something happened to it.
Everything.
Right. Well, and that's how factions pull one way or another on your character, on your group. You are now, you owe them one.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't get out of jail by yourself because you didn't have a faction.
Exactly.
And now they're like, hey, we helped you. See how great we are. Either do a thing for us or maybe like this is a longer term involvement. Isn't it great how we get people like you out of jail and like back on the street doing your thing?
I mean, that's one of those positive tropes that we're always talking about that can lead to good narrative experiences. Like you literally get bailed out of jail, but now that person has sway over what you do. Otherwise, they're just going to say, screw it, and send you right back to jail. That's been in like every movie, every TV show, every book ever. But it's a fun one. It's a positive trope. It's in those books because it works, right?
Right. Well, and sometimes these are just jumping off points.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be at the start of a campaign for some reason or another. You owe somebody something. And the first job is we're going to get even and you're going to do this thing. And then you can walk away.
I love that.
You can stay aligned with us. It can be a jumping off point to something else that's more character background driven. Shadow Group A helped get you out of jail and you did a thing for them. But that, you know, they don't necessarily align with what we want to do. So like now we're out and we did our successful thing. There's a bad guy who was affected by the job we had to do for them. Mm-hmm. But there's also Shadow Group B, which we're just like, we're more in tune with. They do the thing that we want to do, or they're like more benevolent or whatever.
You know what I mean? I can totally open up like double agent plot lines as well.
So the spider webs from different factions and how they relate to each other, which again, there are plenty of games that have mechanics for, you know, how these groups interact with you, how they push against each other. And
now that you said it, I think Blades is the best example. Now that you said it, for sure.
Yeah. The Forged in the Dark is an excellent way to show the literal mechanics of factions, not just like that they exist.
Right.
You know, like I like how I think Simbarum is an interesting rule book because they start with the history. They start with the factions.
Yeah.
So before you even get into the rules, you have a sense of like, why might this stuff happen? Why might you?
I mean, you and I talk about this all the time. I really love that kind of like in media res vignette style storytelling, whether it be a one shot or a legacy campaign of just individual stories. And that a lot of that comes from, as I've said before, my love of Conan and how it gives you vignette stories, short stories from weird tales, but it tells a larger story. And that's, I mean, that's a perfect way to jump into one of those saying, hey, you're in prison for whatever reason, or hey, you owe this this person a lot of money and you better do it. Otherwise, you're screwed. But I guess one of my last points for the advantages of factions that I really love is it's a great way to introduce lore and kind of like legacy setting characters, right? So like if your players, for instance, aren't latching onto the lore, they're not really into it, the faction and why they're doing what they're doing and why their overarching goals matter to them and thus matter to you now that you're part of that faction is a great way to give the characters a vested interest in that lore. And plus, like also you get to play like dope characters like, okay, D&D, right? You join the Harpers. You get to go hang out with Mert the Merciless, right? Now Mert the Moneylender, excuse me. Or like if you're playing in Dune, maybe you're under like House Atreides, you get to go hang out with like Thufir Hawat. Some people say Thufir Hawat. I don't know because it's a book. Nobody can say. But that being said, I mean, you've got all these different kind of like legacy setting characters that are really great. Lord of the Rings, Bilbo Baggins, Gandalf. These factions can kind of help you introduce your players to that.
Right. In the One Ring, the patrons figure very heavily, especially in the point that I wanted to make, the last like kind of advantage point that I wanted to make, which is patrons are, and factions in a more general sense, are like a great way to explain the start of things, right?
Yeah.
Instead of just meeting in a tavern, like for who knows why, we've all been called here by Gandalf, or we've all been called here as rebels who don't know each other yet. We're forming the cell for a faction. Blades in the Dark, we're part of kind of the beginnings of this gang, which is now going to interact with these other gangs or non-gang factions on these sliders. So instead of saying, why would we get together? Like, I mean, this is a literal answer to we met in the tavern.
Totally.
Why this first job is happening. Because we're either part of or soon to be part of potentially a faction.
I mean, Bilbo Baggins had a contract for his employment for the Dwarves of Erebor. If that's not a faction, I don't know what it is. It's signed by a contract, man.
Yeah, and whether you do it or not, you are either on the good side or the bad side of Gandalf, which is a powerful lever in the world of Middle Earth. I just wanted to mention one thing that I liked about the faction systems that we've kind of have developed in our Twilight 2000 game, which is that this is not a black and white, good and bad, like clean situation with factions, because you have NATO in the United States.
Sure.
You have the Soviets. They're not just the two things fighting. They are Poland. There are national factors here. There are, you know, the people who live here, the factions that live here who are like, hey, just leave. Just please all take your war and fight it. Not here.
Right, right.
Which is kind of like makes it interesting to me, because it's not like if you just side with the NATO and you just fight Soviets, that it's just clean like that. That there are other factions, even if it's just like pacifists or people who are just trying to serve, just survivors, or the home army. You know, there's other groups who seem totally unaffected by all this, but they get hit with the splash damage.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's more complicated than this, especially because what I'm about to talk about is a kids show, but it reminds me of an episode of the Clone Wars where they go to like this planet and there's all these little squirrel people that roll around. And they were very much like that. They were like, hey, keep your war away from us. We don't ally with the Republic and the Separatists. Off our backs.
When they went to the Sonic the Hedgehog planet.
Yes.
Just because there's factions doesn't necessarily mean you like pick one and go right. with it. Sometimes you do. You are forced to pick a side, or at least kind of like err on one where we're not going to help them, but we're going to not like actively thwart them. But it's because these factions are smashing into each other.
Yeah.
Things that you don't necessarily have control of. I think that that's a good thing too when it comes to like kind of cluing the players into scope or like kind of where they stack up in the world is just like you are not going to be able to just tell the Lords of Waterdeep what to do. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
There are factions and there are moving parts that are like kind of too big for you mm-hmm. that you can aspire to or you can know that you got to steer clear of, you know, because you have to know your strength. You have to know your capability.
Yeah. And to me, I think the moral of that episode of the Little Sonic the Hedgehog people, too, was it's very much that quote by I don't know whom, and I'm going to paraphrase it. So if you know, go ahead and at me. But all it takes for evil to thrive is for good people to do nothing. So apparently this quote is, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And apparently it's from the Christian Bible. So, whoops, probably not the best thing to paraphrase and butcher. I promise I mean no offense. So essentially what happened is the Separatists came in, and no matter what these little Sonic the Hedgehog people were going to do, the Separatists were still going to steamroll over them and essentially destroy their town, kill all of them, and this was going to become like a territory for them. But instead, the Republic got in there and said, yo, if we don't do something about this right now, if we don't stop these people in their tracks, this is what's going to happen to you. And they decided to say, you know what? Okay. And even though it was kind of like reluctantly, they ended up joining a faction and becoming a Republic outpost mm-hmm. at the end. And I mean, exactly like you were saying, sometimes it's completely beyond your control. But if you're playing, especially in kind of like a morally dichotomous game, if there is the good and there is the evil, sometimes it doesn't benefit anybody to not choose a side from that, whatever side it might be.
And that's not an endpoint necessarily either. Just because you allied with a faction to kind of get the best deal you could at the time to minimize damage doesn't mean that you're just locked into that forever. This might be allies and being within a faction are two different things.
Right.
And
right.
some of these things come and go. Like, say, in Simarum, right? You go into the forest. You don't have a guide, so you hire a guide. That is a individual relationship. This is not aligning yourself. You're not getting in with an adventuring guild because you're like, we just will never have a guide. This is an instance where you have to ally somehow, right?
Yeah.
So there's scale to all of this stuff. You can go to war with another faction, or you can recruit away, or you can just stay away from them, you know?
Yeah.
Running is a perfectly valid option in a lot of situations. So understanding kind of what the relationship is with these factions and like how they can evolve, because an enemy doesn't have to be an enemy forever. A unallied faction could become an ally, could become an enemy. You know, this is the evolution of the setting.
I guess this is my time to give my little jab of opinion in here. So you're all privy to it now. Very rarely in my experience, and I've been doing this for quite a long time, and so has Steve, does it ever pay for the party to have extremely disparate affiliations when it comes to factions? If you have a druid and they want to be part of the Emerald Enclave or whatever, like, fine. Like, you know what I mean? If you want to have a bard that was a part of a bardic college and a mage that was part of a wizard college, like, that's fine, right? Because they can or they cannot play a major role in the story. But if you've got, like, these kind of wide-spanning factions, such as in Simbarum, if you're allied with the Barbarians, they're not going to get along particularly well with the people who are allied with the Ambrians, etc. Divisiveness like that can be fun if handled correctly, but I will say handle with extreme, extreme care, because more often than not, at least empirically for me, it only serves to drive individual party members apart, and it creates a ton of workload to understand and acknowledge why you're together in the first place, putting more work on the players and the GM.
Right. It has to still make sense.
Yeah.
You know, just because there are these options, you have to, it has to make sense why you're allying with some, joining another, enemies of another. It can't just be throw a dart, hit a faction.
Right.
That's who we work with. Because like characters are characters for a reason. They've made these choices. So like if you're part of a criminal group and some of you are evolving more towards like Robin Hood.
Right.
Some of you are evolving more towards, we want to get a ton of money and build a keep and go out here and be lords of this area. That's evolution of the story. But bear in mind that that is going to cause some rifts in the group if there's just these very clear different goals.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it can drive a wedge into the best of all parties. It doesn't matter how tight-knit you think you are. If you have completely separate motivations than the person sitting right next to you, it can make for a much more difficult game. So it's not a never do this situation, but it's a handle with extreme care.
Yeah, just be aware of it and treat it as that there has to, it has to be grounded in some reason.
Definitely.
And if they can be resolved, or at least if they can exist side by side, then like you're in a lot better shape than if there's splintering.
Yeah, totally. All right. I think we covered some pretty broad ground in today's episode. If you have anything that you want to tell us about your experience with working within or without factions, ways that it has contributed to or diminished your games, we would absolutely love to hear about it. I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Steve so he can give you the social information and you can get a hold of us.
So everything starts at iCastSpells.com. That's where all the stuff related to the pod is, and plenty of other stuff. But that's where you're going to find all the episodes and all the links to all the cool things. You can check us out on Twitter at @passive_podcast. You can email us at passiveagropod@protonmail.com. We're on Facebook, where you can get the updates that we've dropped a new episode, which come out on Wednesdays now, by the way. And if you don't have some of the other socials, you can interact with us there. Throw us a little thumbs up or a little comment on the episode if you can't post something on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And we're on all the podcatchers. If they allow you to rate and review, please do, because we love the feedback. And also, it just gets us in more ear holes.
For sure. I want to say thank you so much for spending this time with us again this week. You've been listening to Passive Aggressive Perception. I am Ivan. This is Steve. And we hope that your next session is the most closely affiliated one yet.
Oh, I like that. But it won't be.
It won't be.